When I was in my first year at St. Anthony's High School, it's where I was a chaplain, I remember being, I guess this was the pretty early on, maybe in the, had to be in the first semester, and I was having a meeting with the principal in his office, and Brother Shane Burke, who's a Franciscan brother, great guy. And we were in the, kind of, at this meeting, and then the bell rang for the change of classes. And he got up. He kind of, it was like clearly he was ending the meeting at this point, and he said, I got to go to class. So I said to him, are you still teaching? I just figured, you know, he was now the principal. He wouldn't be in the classroom anymore. And he said, oh yeah, I'm absolutely still teaching. He said, I'll never not teach. And he told me, he said, if you step outside of the classroom, you lose touch with what's going on in the classroom. He said, I'm not teaching full time anymore, but you can't stop. I could tell he meant it. I always remembered that. I was impressed by that. We were in this very nice office, and he was behind this very kind of prominent desk. Clearly, he's the boss, in charge of a lot of people. The bell rang, and he's like, I gotta go teach math. Like, end of the day, like, that's what it's about. That's what we do. At least in that context. I liked that. I think it made him a good principal. Somebody sent me an article not too long ago, and it was about the former NYPD commissioner. His name was Joe Esposito. He was commissioner, I guess, about 20 years ago. He had that position for 13 years. Immensely respected guy. I've since asked a couple of cops who worked back in those days, what did they think of him? And they all said great things. He had held every job in the department. He was at ground zero. He was the commissioner in 01. And they say that he was there for weeks after the attacks in the rubble. First it was rescue, then it was recovery. I think 23 police officers died that day there. And they say he was there the whole time. Not just there, but like in the thick of it. This guy was the police commissioner. He was the highest ranking uniform member of the department. And he was in the rubble. I mean, isn't that great leadership? He has cancer now. He's got brain cancer. And they suspect it's related to working in the rubble. That's what great leaders do, isn't it? They take one for the team, or they're at least willing to. All the leadership books, they call it servant leadership, and it is. I think it's also godly leadership. I think it's holy leadership. And the likes of Joe Esposito would probably blush at that and probably dismiss that. Godly and holy. Well, it is. I mean, look at these readings tonight. Look at this first reading from Ezekiel. Look at this description of how God is and what God does. It's this whole shepherd sheep thing. Jesus always talked about it, being the one who goes after the lost sheep. It's the same concept. But it's interesting here. This is God speaking, and he goes, I myself will look after and find my sheep. I myself, I will do it. I will go. I'll be searching in the rubble. I'll be teaching in the classroom. Even though I'm God, I'm the principal, I'm the police commissioner. But the great ones go where they're supposed to go, in the rubble, whatever the rubble means and looks like. I will rescue them, he says. When they're lost, I'll find them. When they're hurt, I'll bandage them up. When they're sick, I'll heal them. No surrogates, no deputies or representatives. I will go. God will go. And it's all prophecy. Who's he talking about? Well, he's talking about himself. He's talking about the second person of the Trinity. He's talking about Jesus. That's the I he's talking about. Jesus will be in the rubble, and so should we. That's what honorable kings do. Tonight is, this weekend, is this feast of Christ the King. This is what the church says, this is what Jesus says, is real kingship. The rubble, not the throne. Sleeves rolled up, not crowns and robes. That's holy leadership. That's servant leadership. That's the way God is, in the rubble, coming after us, searching for us. You know, the church in the old days, not even that long ago, I remember talking when I was especially in the seminary, which is like 30 years ago, I remember talking to old pastors back then, what it was like in the, you know, the 40s and the 50s, the 1960s in the church, the role of a pastor. It was pretty different than it is today in a lot of ways. Usually, first of all, there were just a whole lot more priests, right? So most pastors had two or three or more sometimes priests in their rectory. The curates, the associate pastors, the assistants. Well, they were the guys that went into the rubble. The pastors didn't. He sat behind a desk. He paid the bills. But he didn't really go into the rubble. All the assistants, they did the people work. Visiting the sick, taking duty, last rites, burying the dead. Unless it was a prominent, important parishioner, he wasn't doing funerals. He wasn't doing weddings. He'd do maybe one mass, the big mass, the high mass, the prominent mass on a Sunday. He'd have that. The prime time stuff. But the secondary things, the pastor just didn't do. But there were always exceptions, right? They always are. I suspect you know who they were, wherever your church was, if you're old enough to remember those, like what it was like in those days. They were the guys that you loved, because they were the ones who served. Even though they were pastor and had the authority and, in a sense, the ability to kind of keep the cufflinks on and not roll up the sleeves, they did. They rolled up the sleeves. They went into the classroom and taught, even though they didn't really have to anymore. They were the great leaders. It's what Jesus calls us to. You know, on this feast day, when we talk about Jesus as King, we get this gospel, where he's talking about people who are hungry and thirsty and alone and sick and naked in prison, people in need. The church is telling us, Jesus is telling us, this is where the king goes, to the people that are hurting, to the people that are in need. Not some castle, not some palace, not some throne, in the rubble, searching for those in need. Hey, and in first century Palestine, that's where the need was. So that's where he went, and that's where he sent the apostles. First century Palestine, you didn't have social services. You didn't have safety nets. If you were a widow, good luck. If you were a widow and had no sons, God help you. You'd be on the street before you knew it. We've gotten better. Society has become better. In Jesus' day, man, these people, the hungry, the thirsty, the stranger, the naked, the ill, the prison, they were in trouble. And that's where the king goes. And we still go there. But it's also not first century Palestine anymore. You know what they didn't have in first century Palestine? Cell phones, social media to be addicted to. For sure, there was one less addiction in Jesus' day. Were kids depressed and anxious and lonely 50 years ago the way they are today? I don't think so. The stats are telling us something's really wrong with our kids. They're like hemorrhaging emotionally. Add that to the list. The hungry, the thirsty, the naked, the ill. You know, marriage has declined by 60% since the 1970s. People getting married now at a 60% less rate. That's not good. How could that be good? The fallout from that, you're my father, but you're not married to my mother. You never were, and you never really will be. And kids and their understanding of what promise and commitment and fidelity is or isn't, man, that can't be good. So in the 21st century, United States, I guess we just add to Jesus' list. But that's where the king goes. That's how God is. I myself, he says, will go. And I will find them. And I will rescue them. I'll search for them. And heal them. There's more rubble. There's just a couple of examples, right? I mean, we could go on. Stuff today that's just ailing, hurting society. But the great kings go to where the rubble is. So should we.